Well, good evening, and welcome to Hard Talk with Miss E. And our segment today is entitled A Whole New World. And some of you may recall that soundtrack by the infamous Peebo Bryson and Miss Regina Bell, who did the lead song to, was it the Aladdin, the Disney movie? You can tell I'm not that up on my Disney movies, but it was a beautiful song that took wave across the nation and probably even the world on our airwaves. And that was the title for our program tonight, A Whole New World. We're still waiting for our guest, Regina Louise, to come onto the line. And that title came from just a wonderful conversation that she and I had about what is the greatest gift that we can give our youth, especially those in the foster care system? And as we were talking about having the difference between the material gifts and the gifts of heart that you give to children that will last forever, that will be memories that they can hold on to, and that will give them a vision for their lives and for their future, we talked about a whole new world. And seeing things beyond what they would normally see. And that comes about from just doing things like we stated in our previous interview with Nicole Markman, where we talked about spending time, giving children a sense of acceptance and belonging by just letting them know that they're valuable and that as we share our time and our world and our views and the things beyond the limitations that have been brought to them in their young lives, what is it to happen? What can be possible for their lives? And we want them to know that the whole world is open and available to them. And another one of our colleagues and people who that you'll get to hear down the line is Ms. Shay Oliveria. No, I didn't say that right. Oliveria. She's going to kill me, Shay. But anyway, Shay has an organization called Bigger Than Your Block. And that the whole concept is that the world is much bigger than the block that we grew up on, the block of our careers, the block of our families, the block of our churches, wherever we may go to worship. There is so much more out there, and it's important that we be able to expand our view, expand our world. And that was the concept of this evening's program. We hope that those of you who may not be listening live but are listening via archive have been about in preparing for the holidays or for Christmas will enjoy this segment. And we hope that some of that you may have already taken and integrated into your life about what is really important. So we will move forward in just a moment. I see we have a message from Ms. Regina Louise. And ironically, it did not occur to me until now that her message, I mean, that her, the singer, the performer of our soundtrack and our guests have the same first name, and that's Regina. So it'd be interesting to know what the significance of that name is, since they both have come together for this evening's call. So let's see if we have someone in our chat room this evening while we're waiting for Ms. Regina to get on the call. And I can check and see who our live listeners are. I'm going to take a look. And if anyone else is listening on, if you would like to call in to contribute to this conversation this evening, you're more than welcome to call in our line, which is, I should know it by heart by now. That number is 424-675-8303. Again, if you'd like to call in to the call this evening, the number is 424-675-8303. So anyway, I'm hoping that those of you who are out preparing for your holidays will be able to have some time to breathe and just remember what the reason for the season is, and that we can just really emphasize sharing our world with others. And if your world is not something you wish to share, then the whole issue is to expand your world. So yeah. At this time, we have on the call our guest, Ms. Regina Louise. Are you there, Regina?
I'm here, Evelyn. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
Fine. And, of course, I was dialing your 707 number because although I read my emails, for some reason I couldn't figure out 424. Go figure. My bad. Wow.
Okay.
Senior moment. These are the moments that remind me that, you know, that I'm getting older, but I love it. I love it.
Well, that means that you survived, and it's much to give gratitude for.
Yes.
So did you get to hear the opening of our call?
Yes, I heard as much as I heard, so I'm not certain what the opening is. I heard you say something to the effect that it's the reason for the season. I heard that.
Okay, mm-hmm. Well, I have something I'm just going to play for you one more time, and then this is actually when I edit the tape, I'll start it here,
okay.
And I will introduce you all over again. So for those of you who are listening, when you come back to hear the archive, you'll get to hear it from this point on, because this part will be edited. So this is the beginning, and this is for you, Ms. Regina.
Thank you. Oh, you're gonna make me cry.
I can show you the world, shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess, now when your heart desire, I can open your eyes, take you wonder by wonder, over sideways and under, on a magic carpet ride, a whole new world.
I'm gonna interview you.
A new fantastic world.
Oh my God.
No one to tell us no, or when to go, or say we're only dreaming.
A whole new world, a dazzling place I never knew. But now from way up here, it's crystal clear that now I'm in a whole new world.
So that was just for you. And as I told our guests, opening that I just find it ironic that we have Regina Bell singing, along with, of course, Mr. Peabo Bryson, and our guest is Ms. Regina Louise. So as we restart our opening of this wonderful interview, which I know it is, already is, not that it will be, it already is, because you're here. Welcome to Ms. Regina Louise.
You know what, Evelyn? I am verklempt right now. I have a big old ball in my throat. And I just want to tell you how touching that is. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And for those of you who are listening, if you think you're touched already, wait until the end of this interview. I've had the awesome privilege of speaking with Ms. Regina recently. However, our initial contact, believe it or not, Regina, I believe that you were our second guest on our Visions for a Child's Heart television program back in 2005 or 2006. Joy every time I watch it, so I'm very excited about this interview. And from our conversation and talking about the significance of what it is, what the greatest gift is that we can give to our youth, especially those in the foster care system, during not only this time of the year, but throughout the year. And we came up together with the title, A Whole New World. First of all, tell our audience a little bit about the beginnings in your life.
Oh, honey. You know, it's so funny because right now I am working on a screenplay. I have to do another pass on the screenplay, which depicts my life story. And I told my producer, I'm like, I don't think I can go back there again. Mm-hmm. I think it's time to hire a screenwriter. And she's like, no, I know that you have it in you. So it's very funny that you asked me to go back to the very beginning, because that I had this like, you know, like, oh, God, you know, because I've been writing about it and talking about it so much in regards to the screenplay. But my very beginnings, I grew up in the same foster home that my biological mother had lived in. My biological mother had me at 17 and my biological half-sister at 13. And, you know, let's be honest, she was not prepared to be a parent. She herself had never had parents. And I think that she was just a beautiful, beautiful girl who got caught up, who wanted love. And she was really pretty. And it was easy for guys to show her, you know, their attention and all of her self-worth came from outside of herself. And I don't blame her for that, because she was a young girl who was not parented or loved for who she was. So she was eager and desperate and hungry to accept the affections of young men, and which she did clearly to the extent that she had two illegitimate children. She abandoned us, I presume. I'm not clear exactly the circumstances which led me to be in the same foster home she was in, but from deductive reasoning, she left us because we were left there. I did not become aware that I actually had a mother who was separate from me until I was probably 9, and that when you read my book, Somebody, Someone, the voice, the beginning voice, the narrating voice is me at, I think I'm 11 years old, and I'm narrating this story. So it was around that time, between 9 and 11, that I became, you know, aware that I was supposed to have a mother, but I didn't. And my biological sister, the lady who kept us, my biological sister called her mama. So I automatically thought, why isn't she my mama? Like, what's a mama? Because I called her Big Mama. You know, I called her Big Mama, and I thought, mama, big boy. And then, you know, the revelation was had that you have a mom. And then, of course, the desire and the wanting is sparked at that point, because it was also hopeful to think that I had something that was better than what I was in, perhaps. So anyway, I was abused terribly in every sense of the word, neglected in every sense of the word. You know, we ate out of garbage cans. We ate food that had maggots in it, and just crazy stuff. And the neglect was profound. The abuse psychologically, physical, was profound. People who would use the fact that my mother wasn't there against us to say, you know, that's why nobody wanted you, because you're bad, you're nasty, you have nappy hair, mm-hmm. you have a flat nose, you have flat feet, you're too light, you're too dark. I mean, it was just in every aspect of my being, I just wasn't enough. That was a message that I got. And, mm-hmm. you know, my eyes were too light. I had freckles, so that meant I couldn't be all black. It was just relentless. And, mm-hmm. you know, the abuse so profound that one day I made a pact with God. I took matters into my own hands. And I said, if this woman hits me one more time, I'm going to take it as a sign from God that she's trying to beat the black off me like she can, you know, profess this to do on a daily basis. Mm. And I'm going to leave. And the day of reckoning came. And she, you know, began thrashing me with a green water hose. And it was awful. And I remember just grabbing that hose. And then I thought the moment of me being my word was there. And so I left, and I thought, God's got my back. At that moment, I, one, came into myself and my own power, two, really understood the power of grace and faith and belief. I really believe that that was the day that I launched. You know, here's something that's profound, at least I think so. When we think of triumph of the spirit, this is something I'm working on, Evelyn, and I'm always working on some thought, but something that I'm working on is when we think of triumph of the spirit, we think of overcoming this odd, that obstacle, you know, stepping over this quagmire, conquering, slaying that dragon, this demon, you know, but really I look at triumph of the spirit as the law of faith and belief. When you use and understand the law of faith and belief, which is as definite as any natural law within our universe, and you couple that law of faith and belief with the creative principles in life, anything that you are in, any circumstance that you come across will be conquered, will be demolished, will be transcended. So I believe that at that point when I made that pact with God, it's like a light switch went on. And from that moment on, every footstep, every thought, everything that I did, I gave it over to grace. And I had faith. And I believed that this is not where I'm supposed to be. And I had faith that where I am supposed to be, I will get there by grace. And creatively, I moved forward. And, you know, I have to say I am very grateful to Maya Angelou for coining the phrase, I wouldn't give nothing for my journey. And I've come to a point in my life where I can say, look what I'm doing. I'm on a call with you, taking a stand, being a voice for 500,000 young people who remain nameless and faceless and marginalized in a system that oftentimes doesn't represent their highest potentiality. So it's because I went through that journey, you know, 30 foster homes, a mental institution, solitary confinement, that I can say, you know, from a more sound place, I have much more of a solid constitution at this place in my life, where I can say, wow, I can look back on that and I can grieve for that little girl, but I can also look and see and count and remember the instances in which hope, faith, and belief delivered me to the place where I am now.
Exactly. And embrace her and celebrate her through other young women who are coming through to find that spiritual place of resolve within themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And for the rest of your story, I did fail to mention in the beginning that you are an author of a book,
yes.
Somebody, Someone,
yes.
A playwright,
a
play that I saw three times and took a different group of kids each time, called Someone,
and
Somebody.
And nominated for two NAACP awards, by the way, that in August it was nominated. Yes, yes.
Oh, congratulations. And that's only the beginning. And I was so excited to hear about the movie production. So, of course, I'll have my tickets there, and I'll be at the premiere and everything else.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, and not only are you doing that and sharing, you're doing things a one-on-one basis. You're not just doing the broad
Absolutely.
Public speaking. You're doing
right.
in your personal life. And we talked about, you know, what were some of the memories that you had as a child that made an impact in your adult life and that you're wanting to carry on to young adults and young and our youth now? Because so many people, as we shared, I get really irritated being in this line of caring, and I won't even say just work, in this line of caring because it is my life as well, that a lot of people, when the holidays come, all of a sudden everybody wants to do something for the children, for poor little foster youth, but failing to realize that these same young people are here 364 other days of the year, and they have birthdays and other days that go unacknowledged. And when they do their little, people do their little thing, and not that we're not grateful for that, but it needs to go beyond that. And
yeah, you know, and let me say this. I just wanted to add, like, an aside to what you're saying. You know, I believe, and we sort of talked about this, like, as a young girl, I was probably one of the most morbid, depressed, in my teenage years, I had the typical behavior of every teenager, and then compound that with not being a wanted child, being in an orphanage, and not having my unique qualities and attributes and characteristics being honed, identified, and cultivated. So you take all of that, and then I was hyperactive on top of that. It was a very challenging time for me because no one took charge of my destiny, of my possibilities, of my potentialities. No one saw that. So what I ended up doing is living out the self-fulfilling prophecies that I'm not good enough, I'm not enough, I'm not this, I'm not that. So a lot of knots, you know, what a metaphor. I was tangled up in knots, no pun intended. So I had to get to a place in my life where I could begin to unravel this tangled web that was woven with me at the center of it, feeling like a nothing and a nobody. And, you know, as I spoke with you the other day in our pre-interview, one of the things I think is really important is, you know, how do I say this? I personally know the value of intimacy and the value of personal contact and the value of taking risks. One of the beautiful things to me about being in foster care, and I think it's something that a lot of foster children and parents should aspire to, I believe that foster kids, we have a head start on most people. Like, I believe that we have the foundation to become bodhisattvas, little Buddhas, because one of the things that's really brilliant, if we really take a look at it and look at it a little closer than the surface, is we learn to master the moment in ways that most kids wouldn't even understand. We deal with rejection and abandonment in ways that most people know nothing about. You know, I know six-year-olds who can manage rejection better than grown men who run the country. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah, because once the kid – see, when a parent rejects you, they usually don't do it in a sugar-coated way. They straight up just don't come. They straight up look you in your face and go, oh, my God, mommy loves you. I'll be at the court hearing tomorrow with no intention. And or they just go, you know what, I didn't mean to have you anyway, so you're better off where you are. And so you learn that love, you know, you learn love in ways that most people shouldn't learn it. And, of course, later down the line, you're going to have to unlearn it. But we have this ability to take hard things better than most people. It's sort of like a double-headed sword, I guess, a double-ended sword, because it's painful that you don't want me, but you know what? At least I know that, and now I have something to work from, you know? And if foster children, I'm not trying to be insensitive, but I'm saying let's work with where we are. Let's meet ourselves where we are. Let's stop breaking ourselves down for what we don't have and build ourselves up for what we do have. And let's identify those strengths. So as a young girl, I knew I was pretty. I knew I had a great smile. I knew I had a charming personality. I knew that I could sing. I knew that I was smart off the Richter scale, although people told me contrary. I knew it was different because when I wasn't around the people who were constantly putting me down, people were like, oh, my God, you speak so eloquently. They had no idea that I was studying the dictionary and the thesaurus from front to back. But the people that I live with would say, what a sociopath. Like, who walks around with a dictionary? You're so stupid. You should already know the word. So I would look at myself and go, you know, what are my assets here? So I learned to stop breaking myself down and building myself up. And it attracted the people that I needed in my life to pull out the better parts of who I was. And, you know, and once you get with that and do it enough times, you learn to do it for yourself, because usually where we come from, people don't stay around long enough to watch what happens. And you know what? I'm in the car with my two sweeties, and one of my sweeties, we're bringing her to UCLA, but I don't want her to get out of the car. I want her to sit here because I can't give her my undivided attention and speak to you, and I don't want her to go off without my attention. So I'm just letting you know that. So I'm just parking in front of, what's this called? Hedrick Hall, honey. I don't know what this is called. Hedrick, some Swedish person. I don't know. But anyway, we're trying to, she's going to go, but I don't want to let her walk out while I'm interviewing with you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Real life.
That's something that I felt it was very important.
Wait, hold on, sweetie, are you okay? I got to check in with the other sweetie who's driving. Sweetie, you okay? Is it okay if we, okay, right on. Okay, we're good. Everybody's good.
Okay, good. Tell them them Miss E said thank you.
Miss E says thank you, lady. You want to say you're welcome?
You're welcome.
Okay, got it.
Thank you. One of the things that you stated, though, that is so important, which is going to take us closer to our topic, because I know you have some place to be at 7. It is now 6:27 already. But one of the things you talked about is when you were not, you know, within the confines of those people who were just speaking all negative things to you, you were able to have something different reflected, something positive. And I would like to say that was another world for you. You were able to reach out and to find that other world in the midst of the chaos, the madness, the muck and the mire and all of that. What is it? Because not every child has that initiative to get out. What is it as the village that we can do? And that brings it back around to the holidays, too, when we're talking about presenting a whole new world to our youth.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you hear me?
You know what? This is a great segue. Okay. You know, it's really fascinating. There's a young woman in my life that is allowing me to me and my partner to be in her life. She, you know, I couldn't be there, we couldn't be there unless she allowed it. And the beauty of her allowing us in her life is that, how do I say this? I last week or the week before, she and I went to San Francisco and we went to the symphony. And we were lucky that Peabo Bryson and all these fabulous African-American singers were singing along with the symphony. And they started singing this song, A Whole New World. And in the moment, I realized that that's exactly what was happening between this young person and myself. Not only was I showing her a whole new world, she was showing me a whole new world. Because what people don't understand is when it's the relationships that we learn everything, the pains, the ups, the downs, the loves, the losses, the joy, the sorrow. It's through relationship. If we were not in relationship, we wouldn't have these emotions reflected back to us. So it's so important to get in and remain in relationship. You know, one of the first things my therapist said to me is, in relationship is where you were wounded. It is only in relationship that you shall be healed. And that's something I will never forget. It is in relationships.
Say that again.
It is in relationships that we were wounded. It is only in relationships that we will be healed. And yeah, you know, so the downside of being a foster child is, ironically, many of the people who are selected to care for our most precious commodities aren't in relationship with them. They're in relationship against them. They're in competition. They're in, I don't need to get into all that. It can, you know, and then there are those people who are obviously in it to win it from a different point of view. But in the fact that I know the percentages of too well because, as you know, I am a national spokesperson for foster care, so I know the stats. So I get that part of it where the people, you know, aren't necessarily serving these children in the way that they need to be served. But anyway, back to in relationships, I feel that as I was sitting at this symphony, and we had the best seats in the house as far as I was concerned, we could see the vein popping in Stephanie Mills' neck, girl, when she was singing, "When I think of a home, I think of a place." Girl, she was wearing it out, right? And, you know, I sat there and I thought, oh, my God, not only am I showing her a whole new world, but guess what? I'm showing that little girl inside of me a whole new world. Because as I open my heart to this child and show her my world, I also open the heart and the eyes of the little girl in me. And that part of me that's mothering this little girl outside of me is also mothering the little girl in me. So it is in relationships that we're wounded. It is in relationships we're healed. This child is healing me as much as I hope I'm opening her world to a whole new world.
Exactly. And it's interesting when you talked about, you know, the healing in my book, which is, you know, all about heart. It's heart work. And that's exactly what I'm talking about, is that when you allow your heart to connect with both the pain and the joy of the children that come into your life, it brings healing into your own as well. And a lot of adults away from having relationships with our young people because they're afraid. They won't say,
okay, whoa. I need you to say that again, my sister. Say that one more time.
I said a lot of adults will not allow themselves to develop relationships and ties with our young people because they're afraid. They're afraid of...
Afraid of what, girl?
Pardon me?
Afraid of what?
They won't actually acknowledge they're afraid of hurting themselves. But they're afraid of not being in control. They're afraid of being hurt. And they will put it out on all of the external things, but really, they don't want those wounds reopened in their own hearts. Rejection, for number one, and all of the other things that come about, because that's the baggage that we all carry to some extent or the other. But when a child comes into your life that you know who has been wounded or has been tossed about, that they say, hurt people, hurt people. So you've got to have your heart open to go in there and roll with it.
At the bottom of that, all that pain and the bottom of all that suffering, it's like you take two rocks. You know how you get a diamond? You take two rocks, you put them in the bag, and the friction and the constant rubbing together, eventually you will get a perfect diamond. The hurt and the pain, if the two people get in that bag and work it and work it and work it, eventually your relationship will shine like with the three C's, clarity, cut, and what's that other one? Clarity, cut, and whatever. You will have the aspects of something beautiful. You know, and that's what the pain is all about. It's like if you're feeling pain, to me, it's indicative that you are not in connection. When you're feeling that kind of suffering and you're feeling that kind of pain within a relationship, it's because you have strayed away from your source, which is love. And pain is nothing more than an indication of you trying to get back to that source, and you don't know how.
Trying to get back in balance.
Absolutely, and you don't know how.
And we, as adults, go in thinking that we're the ones to control and balance these young people's lives. And a lot of times the kids are telling us, you're all out of balance yourself. And we don't want to hear that. And reality is that it's true. But if we work together to be in balance, even though we know that someone has to be the person that's, you know, doing the parenting at the same time. But we have digressed slightly, but this is really what I am all about. But let's go with the holidays. What is it that our village can do during and beyond the holidays to open a whole new world to our young people? And why is that the most important tip?
You're going in and out a little bit. So you know what? Hold on. Things are changing in my world right here, and I'm just trying to figure it out. Okay, so now you have my devoted attention. You want to know what people can do in order to show up for kids in the holidays? Okay, I say take the risk. I say take the risk. Get out of your comfort zone and go get those kids and bring them into your comfort zone. Leave your throne, leave your palace, leave your place of comfort for 5, 10 minutes, an hour. Go get a child and take that risk of bringing that child with their potential rage, their potential rejection, their potential, because at the end of the day, what it is, they're afraid. They're afraid. Yeah. And who wants to have fear be the base emotion that a child should have to feel? Because when a child is feeling, when you get a child and you're mentoring or you're going to bring that child into your home, what I believe, all those negative emotions that are going to show up, that's about the disconnection. Mm-hmm. It's about the last place where they didn't connect. Mm-hmm. And because if they had connected, they wouldn't be with you. You are just an indication of the previous failure. And they're carrying the burden of that failure, not that family. That family goes on that.
Those failures.
Yeah.
All of those.
So they're carrying the failure of the mother, the sins of the mother, the sins of the father, everybody. So it's a lot to ask of a child. That's why I think that kids in foster care, if we really knew our business, we would know that we are the potential leaders of the world in terms of showing people how to falling down 1,000 times and getting up 1,001. Forget falling down 7 times and get up on the 8th one, baby. In the life of a foster child, you're going to fall down a minimum of 10,000 times and get up 20. That's just the way it is, because not only are you having to pick yourself up for yourself, you're having to pick yourself up for you, your mama, your daddy, and everything else that has failed, the failure of each family you go to. So what I think we need to do is give these kids a break. Give these kids a recess. Give them a recess from this emotional roller coaster. You know, grab a child. Take them to the basic brown bear factory. Let them pick out a little bear and put the heart in it and get the little the birth certificate and let them have something that they can take with them in all of their journeys. Go take a child to the Ritz-Carlton and have high noon tea. Show them a new world. If you can't afford the Ritz-Carlton, take them anywhere. Give them an experience. Mm-hmm. Sit with them. Take them to reading hour at Barnes & Noble. Take them to read a book to them. There are books that you can go to at the Hallmark store where you can take a kid, take them to the Hallmark store, right? Get a book. Have them record their voice and story into the book and have it give it to one of their family members, a grandmother, a grandfather, a mother who's in prison, a father, anybody. Get them to start feeling and connecting. Go take them for a walk. Show them the ocean. So many kids in the inner city have no idea what the Pacific and the Atlantic Ocean really is about. Go take them. Get these children to open up.
Right. And the key thing.
And be quiet and listen. Go ahead.
You're right. And the key thing is that spending that quality time. And if they don't open up that moment, don't expect them to. And I think a lot of times we're looking for immediate gratification to be appreciated. And sometimes it feels like a thankless situation to be in. But sow it. You know, it's planting. As soon as we plant a seed, we don't see the fruit. It takes a while. So don't because that child isn't able to express a sense of gratitude to you. They might not even open their mouths or might roll their eyes at you the whole time, but the fact that they are willing to go with you says more than any of the works could say, because they're surprised and just glad that you want to spend time. So my thing
You know what? I have to say this. I don't mean to interrupt, but this is on my mind. If I don't say it, I'll forget it. One thing that I'm learning, and it's taken me a while to understand it, I'm learning that too many times I go in, like I see a kid who I think is in distress. 9 out of 10 times, I'm not meeting that child where that child is at. 9 out of 10 times, I'm trying to bring that child, I'm trying to give that child their comeuppance, and I'm trying to bring them to where I'm at. And I'm very much guilty of that. And then I wonder, and I'm sure a lot of people do this, why it didn't quote-unquote take. What I'm slowly beginning to understand, I have to meet the child where the child is at. So if I go and I mentor a child and they're in a homeless shelter, I've got to meet them in that homeless shelter for a minute or two or three or four. And then maybe we go to a cafe. And then maybe we gradually each step upgrade it, because that child is not going to be able to match my vibration. If I go in, snatch that child out of that homeless shelter and take them to the Ritz-Carlton, guess what? It's a disaster waiting to happen, because already I'm expecting that child to vibrationally be able to match that situation. I look at it as, oh, I'm giving this child their comeuppance. Even if, let's take all the material accoutrements out. If I take a child who's never been hugged, never been touched, never been told they're pretty, never been spent any, no adult in their life has spent any time with them, and they've been sequestered to be the maid, and if I take that child, bring that child to my house, as she watches my house clean her bedroom, okay, and as she sees my cook her food and put it in the refrigerator, we're not on the same vibration. That child is not going to know how to relate, because she's been that maid. She's been that cook. She's been the janitor. She's been the person scooping the poop, cleaning the, you know, scrubbing on her knees. So to automatically, we think that everybody wants a Cinderella story, but it's a vibration situation. It's about getting your alignment right, because if you come from it like with lack and scarcity, I don't have, I ain't got, and then you get into a situation, you've been praying, God send me, God send me, God send me, beseeching and searching, and then you get it, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to know what to do with it, because you're not vibrationally ready for it.
And I'm seeing that.
So it's up to us to meet kids where they are. That's one of the hardest lessons I've learned as a mentor, as a parent, because I want to give everybody their comeuppance. I want to rescue people. And it's not about that. And that's the hardest lesson I've learned, is that it's not my job to come in and judge somebody's situation and think that what I have is better off than what they have. It's for me to meet them where they are. You know, if they're 3 feet tall and I have on stilettos, which make me 6 feet tall, it's me take those shoes off and come down and look at them in their eye and meet them where they are, as opposed to directing.
And that doesn't mean that you don't continue to walk forward, though, because
absolutely,
a lot of times people say to our young people, oh, well, you know, you wouldn't be interested in that, or you, that's too difficult for you or too complicated for you, and they underestimate what our children are capable of taking in. So that's a balancing act.
Right. Now, I don't mean meet them where they're at, because I don't feel that they can go forward. But it's to me, and you're asking me, you're interviewing me, and it's about a vibration. A child who may have aspirations and may have desires, but they may not have the energetic match to be there. We all have to work for what we get, and it is all a journey. And a lot of it, to me, is an emotional journey. You know, how many athletes and actors have you found that get that money and become crackheads, become drug addicts, get in rehab, disrespectful, deface property, people and their own bodies, because they were not a vibrational match for the success that they got? It takes time to calibrate. It takes time to allow that success to have an impact and to get into your body, and we take it on as it's us. You know, oh, okay, you got $1 million, now I'm $1 million. It's like, no, you are who you are, and now you just earned $1 million with your talent, with your ability. You are not that $1 million. And too often we become the $1 million, and so when the $1 million is gone, so is our sense of self and purpose and worth. So it's very important. it's very important for us to grow our young people into their desires slowly, thoughtfully, in a very nurturing way, so that they emotionally get prepared for the journey in which they take. A swimmer doesn't become a swimmer overnight. It's a psychological preparation. It's a breaking down of one and a building of another. It's a constant breaking down, building up. You break down what you can't do only to build up what you can do, and what you can't do leads you to what you can do, and psychologically you accept that. And each win that you get sets you up. But when you go from not swimming at all to, oh, my God, you're standing at the Olympics and you have no training and you have no – you can't handle that. Or if you just have to be – if you happen to be this person who got lucky because of nepotism and this and that and shortcuts here and shortcuts there, and all of a sudden, wow, here I am, you're not always ready for what that is all about. So my whole thing is mentor these kids, grow these kids to the place where they get to be their best. And that's what it is for me. You know, I mentor kids and I model for kids what I think is my personal best. I show them all of it. I show them, you know, like this young girl that I'm mentoring, and we talked a little bit about this. You know, it's easy to show up at the shelter and take a kid out for the day. It's easy to go, you know, over to Fenton's Ice Cream and have an ice cream and drop the kid off, and that's something great. But it takes a whole lot of moxie to create the relationship where the kid gets past the gatekeepers of your own psychic limitations. The kid gets, you know, past, you know, we talked about this, the epidermis layer of the skin, and they permeate to the muscle, to the tendons, to the cells, and eventually they work their way to your heart. And I believe we're back to that. And I believe that when we can love a kid or mentor a kid or coach a kid from the heart, we're teaching that child to do the same. We're teaching the child that the destiny to the heart is a journey well worth the taking. And that's exactly what we're modeling.
Mm-hmm,
you know, if you keep a child at arm's length, then they're going to feel arm's length is the place to be.
And why is that even more important than giving them material gifts?
Because fads come and go. Material gifts, especially in these kids' lives, you know, by the time they have moved from garbage bag to placement they've lost 90% of what they brought. The moment you leave, at least it was like this when I was in the foster care system. Let's say if I got terminated, which I did a lot, 30 different homes, I would leave my stuff. They had to get me out of there quickly so I didn't disrupt the energy of the other residents in the home. By the time I walked out of that door, those kids had already taken all my stuff, okay? Sure. It was over. It was a wrap. None of my personal things would ever make their way back to me. But if you take the time to love a child, give them your time and your patience, they could move 30, 40 different homes. They can lose the clothes, the shoes, the panties, the bras, the trucks, all of it. But what they will not lose is that sense of ownership that you gave them over their own life. When we take a child and we nurture them and we mentor them, what we're really doing is giving them a piece of dominion of their own life. That is absolutely priceless.
Yes, thank you. And I couldn't say that any better, because that is the message that I want to get through to people. And see, and most people don't understand, you know, just what you just described. When you leave, you're yanked out. Half the time, the majority of the belongings that you have accumulated there, hardly any from that you came in with, are gone. But we want to create something that they can hold in their hearts forever. And that is going to something that's going to stay in their minds, that gives them that little bit of oomph, or put a smile on their face when they feel like they can't, to be able to hear some of your words or feel the warmth of your presence. That is what our young people need. That's what we all need, really. But we need to be
a sense of self, a sense of authentic self. No, I'm going to tell you something. To have an entryway to the self is profound. It's a profound sense. You know, Donald Trump can own all of New York if he wants. He can put them tacky gold buildings up anywhere he wants, from Vegas. And by the way, they're not all that great, by the way. I stayed at that little tacky Trump Tower. They didn't even have a place for me to get some Fiji water or Pellegrino, okay? But anyway, I digress. So he can own all that territory. But see, there's a piece of territory that if we can just corner a little bit of, and if we can just own a little bit of it, it is worth more than what Donald Trump could ever think to be worth in 100 lifetimes. And that is the property of the self. Do you hear me?
Yes. That's what
I'm talking. The property of the self. It's about who you are.
Yes.
And what you want to be.
It says who you be, who we be.
Okay, and who you are allowing to have dominion over you, what beliefs, what personal myths you have going on. And, baby, when somebody can look me in the eye and tell me you are beautiful, you are capable, and everything that you need you already have, and it's just a journey for you to unfold, you're in a constant state of unfoldment, that is priceless.
Exactly.
It's priceless. And you're giving me something to believe in that has nothing to do with trend. It has nothing to do with the stock market. It has nothing to do with assets and acquisitions. It has only and all to do with who I am right here, right now, never changes. Because it always is.
Yes. Ooh, wait, we don't have to say anything else because that is the message. And I would really hope that we can do this again. And actually, we're overdue for another video interview. But for their listeners, and you know, this call is being archived for people who don't get it. And I hope that this is something that people will listen to day in and day out over the next 364 days of the year, because this is something we need. And we've talked about mentoring, and people just don't know how. But first of all, we need to know the why. And you just told us why.
Absolutely.
And the how is a part of us gaining a sense of our own selves as well. And when you're clear about that, there's no stopping. There's no fear that can stop you.
Mm-hmm. I just want to leave you with this one little Chinese proverb. I love it. I love it. I have two quotes that I love to use, but I think this Chinese proverb will be very, very, very prophetic in its own right. There's a Chinese proverb, and it has to do with mentoring and just showing up. If you want prosperity for 10 years, grow trees. If you want prosperity for 100 years, grow an orchard of trees. If you want prosperity for more than 100 years, grow people.
Mm. Wow. I love it. I love
and
it.
That's the message I want to get to all of our African-American listeners. If we want the prosperity that we feel is owed to us, there are 500,000 children in the foster care system. 65% of them are African-American, and if you do the math, that's more than 300,000 children. If you want prosperity for 10 years, grow trees. For 50 years, grow an orchard of trees. For 100, grow people. Go out there, get those children, grow them so that for the next 100 years, we know where we're going as a people, as a race, as a nation, as a culture.
Beautiful. We have 5 minutes remaining. That's just awesome. And I see that we have some people in the chat room as well as on calls, and I recognize one of the numbers as being from one of my colleagues and sisters in the village from New Orleans, and I'm not sure. I'm saying this to give her preparation because I'm about to put her on the line to see if she has some words to share, if she just wants to say something to you. She's doing an awesome work in New Orleans with Nix International. So, Ms. Cheryl Nix, are you there?
Yes, good evening.
Good evening. So great to have you.
I'm multitasking, but I have enjoyed what I've heard the last 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And That's also my motto. Our future is in our youth. So Ms. Edlin knows my passion for our youth. My heart is there also, along with the guests and everyone else.
Wonderful.
That's wonderful.
And we're going to have you on at some point to share. You've just written a book, and the name of your book is?
Poems from the Heart with Steps to Grow By.
Yes, and she has one that I've claimed since before the book got published. I called my poem, and it's just awesome. So hopefully you and Regina will get to connect, and perhaps you can have her there in New Orleans at some point. And of course, I want to come too. But you're just
wonderful.
Yes. And I'm so grateful, and we're going to have you so that you can recite that as well as just talk about, you know, caring for the children and just bringing them into and opening a whole new world. So thank you for being on the call. I know I didn't know if you expected me to bring you on, but I saw your number, and I said, well, I'm going to bring her on. So I didn't want to startle you, put more lumps in people's throats. Thank you. Okay, let's see. Is there anyone on? Hello, you're talking to Heart Talk with Miss E. Hello? Okay, no response there. Let's see who's in our chat room. See if we have any questions or comments there in our chat room. I'm trying to maneuver these boards. This is interesting.
Take your time.
Pardon me?
I said take your time.
Okay, let's see. Okay, there's our chat room. And it just says, hi. And a little wave, so I guess we have no questions there.
Oh,
wonderful.
That's cool. Hi.
Yes, but I see that we have several listeners who are listening via internet, but not in the chat room nor on the telephone call. So they're just live listeners who aren't able to communicate with us. But how can our listeners get in touch with you and also to purchase your book?
Okay, they can go to, in order to purchase my book, they can go to agatepublishing.com, and you know, I asked, you know, contact Eileen Johnson. She's my contact there. And I again, like I said to you, I wish that this Christmas season 100 people would get a book for at least one child in foster care that they know, or one child who's just struggling, or, you know, social workers, or, you know, frontline workers. And if they wanted to get a hold of me, they can contact me at www.reginalouise.com. And I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter, and I'm also, my book, Somebody Someone, has its own Facebook page. So
Somebody,
I've tried to
someone.
Cover all those. Yes, I've covered all those bases.
Now, the publishing is agatepublishing.com?
Yes.
Okay,
Agate,
and that's
publishing.
Eileen Johnson.
Yes, and that's my paperback publisher. I love them. And, yeah, they take care of my people.
Wonderful.
People who take inquiries, so it's all good.
Wonderful. Well, we're so glad to have you. We know that you have some place to be in 2 minutes, and our call is about to end. And something else is, I was just writing your name in our chat room. I don't know if you know that my middle name is also Louise. So that's another.
Oh, look at that. Evelyn Louise Hart.
Yeah. How about that?
Yay. Kindred spirit. Right on.
Yes. Yeah. So we're going to have to do something with the Louise Hart.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Louise.
Well, Evelyn, that's right. Heart Louise,
well,
thank you so much.
And we look forward to sharing with you. And as Regina stated, if you know a child or foster child especially that you would like to give a gift to besides your time, order her book. It's an awesome book. I'm circulating it amongst the youth that I mentor, and we have little discussions about the books that we read. And it would just be an awesome gift to share with someone, and also supporting the message that she is presenting around the world. And you can also have her to come and speak, and she'll also let us know when the play is back on the road and when the movie is in the theater. So bless you, Regina. Love you, and we look forward to you soon.
Okay,
take
and
care.
You know what? Yeah, you too. And let me just say this one thing. My play is available if anybody wants to hire me to come and do it as a fundraiser, just so you know. I'll put that out there.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, honey.
Okay, God bless.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
I can show you the world, shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide? You